Hello, this is Todd Durakan with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, April 21st, 2026, coming to you from my home studio. And we start on the front page, Public Safety, History Saved, History Lost. Oglesby Mansion escapes harm as fire strikes nearby Mueller home. This article's by Scott Perry, Decatur. Ann Owens has built a reputation for saving things of historic value in the community. Early Monday morning, that instinct for historic preservation became more urgent when she arrived at the scene of a fire at the Henry Mueller Mansion. With flames shooting from its roof and over its elaborate entrance, her attention immediately went to the neighboring Governor Richard J. Oglesby Mansion just a few feet away. Mentally, I was making a list of items that are Oglesby items that we could try to remove if needed, said Owens, treasurer of the Governor Oglesby Mansion, Inc. Board of Directors. Fortunately, our fire department handled the situation fantastically. Decatur Fire Department crews responded around 3:30 a.m. Monday to a report from a passerby of smoke in the area of the 400 block of West William Street. They arrived to find the Mueller Mansion heavily involved in fire through the roof. Fire Chief Neil Elder said at the scene, "When we saw how much fire was in this, we put a hose line between Oglesby and Mueller to make sure that it didn't extend to the Oglesby Mansion," Elder said. "It was very reassuring to see how well the Decatur Fire Department works as a team," Owen said, noting that when she arrived, they had a firefighter at the front and back of the Mueller home and more spraying water on the east side of the Governor Oglesby Mansion. Elder said crews quickly deployed a handline through the main entrance and advanced to the second floor, encountering light smoke conditions and a small amount of fire. Firefighters then continued to the third floor, where they located a significant body of fire. Initially, interior attacks were thwarted by too much fire upstairs, he said. We went into defensive mode for a little bit and got it knocked from the outside, and then we went back inside, Elder said. The fire was upgraded to a second alarm, which increased the number of arriving companies from 5 to 7, leaving just one to respond to the rest of the city until it was brought under control a little more than an hour later, Elder said. Elder said other structures pose a challenge to firefighting efforts because of how well they are built and the fact that there are a lot of nooks and crannies for fire to hide. The cause of the fire is under investigation. The home at 405 West William Street was built in 1908 for industrial executive Henry Mueller. The eldest son of Hieronymus Mueller, founder of Mueller Company. The cooler temperatures and the lack of the extreme wind of the past few days aided firefighters in their efforts to control the fire and its spread to neighboring buildings. Like the firefighters, Owens expressed thanks for the lack of wind. Thinking beyond the Oglesby home, I was very concerned about the entire block, actually. All these beautiful homes are very close to each other, she said. It doesn't appear to be any damage. We are going to still do an inspection and stuff, and we're going to work with the fire department to see if they notice anything. They'll inspect it, and then we'll have someone come in and inspect it, said Jerry Culp, executive director of the Macon County Conservation District, who was on the scene. The Conservation District owns the property, while its contents are maintained by the Governor Oglesby Mansion, Inc. Board of Directors. Oglesby was elected to 3 non-consecutive terms as Illinois governor. He was also a close friend and supporter of Abraham Lincoln. The Oglesby Mansion was designed in 1868 by William LeBaron Jenney, a Chicago architect who was best known for designing the first modern skyscraper. Construction on the mansion is in a style called Italianate and began in 1873. The mansion, which is on the National Register of Historic Places, is dedicated to preserving Oglesby's legacy through its display of artifacts and various events. In the main photo here, which dominates the page, taken at night, this image provided by the Decatur Fire Department shows the upper story of the Mueller Mansion engulfed in flames. And since it is dark, we obviously can't see much other than the fire, and there is a spotlight. Hoses across the driveway and front yard, and flames just pouring out of the underside, the soffits of the beautiful ceiling, and then the roof as well, behind the columns. Just a very dramatic photo. Decatur Fire Department photo credit. And two other smaller color photos. Decatur Fire Department firefighters finished spraying water on the roof of the vacant Henry Mueller Mansion in Decatur on Monday, April 20th, and we're seeing the extended arm of a bucket lift truck with two firefighters in there. This is during the day now. They're spraying directly down toward the center of the photo. We can see the water, and heavy damage on the upper roof section is really all we're seeing from the roof line up. Lots of charred wood and damage there, and then next to it, an even greater idea of the damage. Damage is seen on the west side of the Henry Mueller Mansion, closely neighboring the Governor Richard J. Oglesby Mansion, after a fire in Decatur on Monday, April 20th. And we're seeing the yellow paint of the building, and most of the roof is destroyed or damaged or missing. And then down one side of the house, we're seeing fire damage as well. Joseph Ressler, Herald and Review, photo credit for both. Hunger: Illinois seeks to save SNAP. 150,000 households could lose federal food assistance May 1st. This article is by Jenna Schweikert, Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. When the One Big Beautiful Bill Act passed in last July, millions of U.S. residents were put at risk of losing access to federal food assistance, including hundreds of thousands of Illinoisans. Because of eligibility and work requirement changes, President Donald Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill Act, also known as H.R. 1, made to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Certain groups of immigrants and some households with dependents have already lost or are at risk of losing access to their SNAP benefits this spring. Among those at risk is Chicago resident Tatiana, a mother of three children, aged 6, 3, and 1. She's been on SNAP for about 6 years, since her first child, her son, Joshua, was born. She requested to be identified by only her first name. Tatiana briefly lost access to her SNAP benefits when her son was an infant and struggled before she was able to re-enter the program. Even now, balancing work and SNAP eligibility is a catch-22, she said. When I do start working now, I have to turn in my paychecks, and if I make too much, then I have to figure out if they're going to cut me off or not because I'm making too much, Tatiana said. But she has to work at least enough to afford necessities outside of food, things like childcare and housing. Currently, Tatiana receives about $975 a month from SNAP for her and her three children. The average grocery trip is a very stressful experience, and she doesn't have much support outside herself, she said. And if she were to lose access to SNAP again, I don't know, Tatiana said. It's stressful. I'm more anxious now. Save Our SNAP Rally. HR1's new network new work requirements went into effect February 1st. Recipients who can't meet the requirements can only receive up to 3 months of SNAP benefits in a 3-year period. May will be the first month that some households will lose those benefits. And as of April 1st, the only immigrants who can receive SNAP benefits are lawful permanent residents, certain immigrants from Cuba and Haiti, and people living in the United States under a Compact of Free Association, a work and trade agreement between the U.S. and the Marshall Islands, Micronesia, and Palau. This removes eligibility from refugees, asylum seekers, certain trafficking and domestic violence survivors, and other location-specific groups of immigrants. Save Our SNAP, a new Illinois-based coalition of more than 85 religious organizations and social groups, food assistance providers, and health and human services organizations rallied on Tuesday, April 14th, at the Illinois Capitol to ask lawmakers to support three bills that would provide support to those who've lost access to their benefits. I know what this means because I've lived close to it. I've been on SNAP. I've watched my mother stretch meals for seven people, Senator Graciela Guzman, Democrat, Chicago, said at the rally. SNAP was not abstract in my life. It was not a talking point. I get to stand here as a senator because I had SNAP. Tatiana was one of hundreds who attended the rally, and she brought her three children with her from Chicago. It's important to me, she said, of the initiative. I feel like the goal was to be heard. It's very helpful to be able to go out there and rally. Nearly 1 million Illinois households received SNAP benefits in February 2026, down from just over 1 million in February 2025. According to the coalition, over 250,000 households are affected by the changes H.R. 1 made. And 150,000 of those have not yet submitted documentation of work, training, volunteering, or exemption to keep their benefits, according to a news release from Governor J.B. Pritzker. Recipients can check their status here. I'm not sure that's accurate. There's nothing, no link or anything, no website, but we'll move on. To many of our neighbors are struggling to feed themselves and their families. Too many are having to make really impossible decisions about paying for shelter, paying for medicine, putting food on the table, Kate Mayer, executive director and the CEO of the Greater Chicago Food Depository, said at the rally. We have to come here and lift our voice because we cannot stand by. SNAP recipients look for a way to earn hours and remained eligible can visit Job Ready Illinois to earn SNAP training hours or serve.illinois.gov to find volunteer hours. Additional work-related resources from the states are also available here. Bills to offset lost benefits. Not feeding people is a choice, Guzman said at the rally. This is not about waste. This is not about fraud. And this is not about responsibility. This is about cruelty. This is about power. Guzman is a sponsor on Senate Bills 3277, 3276, and 3167. The three bills that save our SNAP is championing. The House versions have all missed the committee deadlines, although that doesn't mean that they won't come back later. The Senate bills are still being considered in committee. The measures call for funding but don't provide funding sources, meaning lawmakers would have to separately allocate money in the budget process. SB 3277 would establish a program, families receiving emergency support for hunger, that would give out one-time $600 payments to families who experienced a complete or partial loss of SNAP funding due to the new work requirements. That's roughly equivalent to 3 months of the average SNAP benefit. To address the other group of SNAP recipients at risk, SB 3167 would extend eligibility of Illinois victims of trafficking, torture, and other serious crimes program to certain immigrants if they are not eligible for SNAP benefits due to H.R. 1's new citizenship or immigration status requirements. The trafficking program provides medical, housing, cash, and food assistance to non-U.S. citizen victims of human trafficking and other serious crimes. In 2024, the law was narrowed to exclude certain visa seekers, asylum seekers, individuals, and those in institutions that cover 50% or more of their daily meals. Last, SB 3276 would create a SNAP response working group to measure the impacts of H.R. 1 on Illinois recipients, gather data on the state's error rate, and issue a report to the General Assembly with recommendations on mitigating the effects of losing federal funding to the program. This marks the beginning of a unified statewide effort to ensure that no one in Illinois, the greatest state in this great country, has to worry about where their next meal is going to come from, Mayer said. We do this work not alone, not as a community organization in one neighborhood or as a food bank that serves one part of the state. We do this together as volunteers and service providers, as advocates, as neighbors. From the State House poll, voters back regulating data centers. This article's by Rich Miller. Rich Miller publishes Capital Facts, a daily political newsletter, and capitalfacts.com. In a mid-March poll, 68% of likely Illinois voters said they would support legislation to regulate data centers to minimize their impact on our utility bills, climate, and water while still allowing them to be built. But while 21% opposed the legislation, more than half of those opponents, 56%, said they did so because they oppose allowing data centers to be built at all. That means 80% either want guardrails or oppose any new construction. So yeah, it's not looking great for anyone who might want to fend off regulation. As you'll see below, this is an 80%+ issue pretty much across the board. Global Strategy Group conducted the survey of 800 likely voters March 16th through 19th on behalf of the Illinois Clean Jobs Coalition, which is pushing the Power Act. Legislation, Senate Bill 4016, House Bill 5513. The survey had a margin of error of plus or minus 3.5%. The proposal was initially supported by large bipartisan majorities, the poll found, as well as in all regions of the state. Democrats and independents supported it the most, 71%. While Republican support was strong, but not by as much, at 61%, and 56% of Republicans who said they opposed the bill told the pollster that they do so because they didn't want any data centers built, period. The same was said by 64% of likely downstate voters. Keep in mind that the margin of error for voter subsets is substantially higher. Organized labor has asked the governor to not pursue his proposed 2-year moratorium on state data center construction tax breaks. The governor stood by his proposal, but did offer the possibility of a compromise. Whether the Enviros bill is the answer remains to be seen, but it seems clear from the poll that Illinoisans want some real regulation for this industry. For example, 96% said they agreed that the state should ensure data centers pay their fair share of water infrastructure costs, with 85% strongly agreeing. 93% say data centers should be required to use efficient cooling systems to reduce water consumption, with 75% strongly agreeing. You almost never see poll numbers like that one on anything. 91% said they want to prohibit data centers from shifting their energy costs to consumer bills. And 91% also said they want to require data centers to provide their own clean energy and storage to power their operations. The only difference was intensity. 84% strongly agree that cost shifting should be outlawed, while 70% strongly support requiring the centers to provide their own clean energy and storage. It goes on from there, require an analysis that a data center won't increase harmful health, water, and environmental impacts on vulnerable communities before a project moves forward, received 92% support, with 79% strong support. Another 86% agreed that rules should be tightened, which allow backup diesel generators for data centers to limit their use during true emergencies. And a whopping 97% said data centers should be required to report their water sourcing and usage. That's about as close as you can possibly get to unanimous in a poll. New technologies and the companies behind them are quite unpopular, but not as much as you might expect above after seeing these numbers above. 39% of respondents said they had a favorable view of artificial intelligence, 25% very favorable, while 51% had an unfavorable view, 25% very unfavorable. 35% rated big tech companies favorably, while 55% rated them unfavorably. And just 30% rated data centers favorably, while 51% rated them unfavorably, 32% very unfavorably, which was the highest of all three. The House held a hearing on the Chamber's version of the Power Act earlier this month. The Senate held a marathon hearing over 2 days the same week on a large number of bills dealing with artificial intelligence, which uses a lot of data centers, social media, etc. Many of these bills appear to come from a desire to address the all-too-obvious anger of the electorate. Some lobbyists are hoping that the usual legislative wait-and-see inertia sets in, and if the poll is accurate, voters have not made this a huge priority when it comes to their own state legislators. According to the poll, just 37% said they'd view their legislators more favorably if their members supported the bill, while 17% said they'd view them less favorably. Almost half, 48%, said it made no difference either way. Moving on to the Local and Nation page on A3, Iran could join peace talks. Articles by Parisa Hafezi and Jana Krukir, Reuters, Dubai. Iran is considering attending peace talks with the United States and Pakistan, a senior Iranian official told Reuters on Monday, following moves by Islamabad to end a U.S. blockade of Iran's ports, a major hurdle for Iran to rejoin the peace efforts. With a two-week ceasefire set to expire, a senior Iranian official said Tehran was positively reviewing its participation, but no final decision has been made. The comments conveyed a clear change of tone from earlier statements ruling out attendance and pledging to retaliate for U.S. aggression. The Iranian official said mediator Pakistan made positive efforts to end the U.S. blockade and ensure Iran's participation. The ceasefire appeared in jeopardy after the U.S. said it seized an Iranian cargo ship that tried to run its blockade and Tehran vowed to retaliate. Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman Ismaili Baghaei said Monday that Washington showed it was not serious about pursuing the diplomatic process and that Tehran would not change its demands. The U.S. hoped to start negotiations in Pakistan shortly before the ceasefire expires, with sweeping security preparations underway in Islamabad, but Baghaei said the U.S. was insisting on some unreasonable and unrealistic positions. A senior Iranian source told Reuters that Tehran's defensive capabilities, including its missile program, were not open to negotiation. Ceasefire to expire. A Pakistani security source said Pakistan's key mediator, Field Marshal Asim Munir, told U.S. President Donald Trump the blockade was an obstacle to talks, and that Trump promised to consider the advice. Trump announced the two-week ceasefire with Iran on April 7th and has not specified when precisely it ends. A Pakistani source involved in the talks said it would expire at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Wednesday, which would be midnight GMT or 3:30 a.m. Thursday in Iran. Asked over the weekend about the chance of an extension, Trump replied, "I don't know, maybe not, maybe I won't extend it, but the blockade is going to remain." The U.S. maintained its blockade of Iranian ports, while Iran lifted and then reimposed its own blockade of the Strait of Hormuz, which typically handles about one-fifth of the world's oil and natural liquefied gas supply. Marines board vessel. The U.S. military said it fired on an Iranian-flagged cargo ship headed towards Iran's Bandar Abbas port on Sunday after a six-hour standoff, disabling its engines. U.S. Central Command released video showing Marines descending ropes from helicopters onto the vessel. Iran's military said the ship was traveling from China and accused the U.S. of armed piracy, according to state media. They said they were ready to confront U.S. forces over the blatant aggression, but were constrained by the presence of crew members' families on board. China, the main buyer of Iranian crude, expressed concern over the forced interception. Chinese President Xi Jinping called for ships to resume passage through the strait as normal and for the conflict to be resolved through political and diplomatic channels, state news agency Xinhua reported. Trump warned on Sunday that the U.S. would destroy every bridge and power plant in Iran if it rejected his terms, continuing a recent pattern of such threats. Iran said if the United States were to attack its civilian infrastructure, it would strike power stations and desalination plants in its Gulf Arab neighbors. Preparing for talks, Trump told the New York Post that Vice President J.D. Vance would arrive in Islamabad within hours at the head of a U.S. delegation. Vance led the U.S. delegation to the first round of talks a week ago, which also included Trump's envoy Steve Witkoff and son-in-law Jared Kushner. Despite Iran's earlier comments that it would not attend, Pakistan geared up for talks. Almost 20,000 security personnel have been deployed across the capital, Islamabad, a government official and security official said. And we're close enough to the end of the first half hour, so we'll wrap up the first half hour with the weather page Decatur four-day forecast on B8. Today, windy and warmer, high of 77, wind southwest 12 to 25 miles per hour. Tonight, a thunderstorm, low of 59, wind southwest 10 to 20 miles per hour. Wednesday, periods of sun, high of 77, low of 55, wind southwest 8 to 16 miles per hour. Thursday, becoming windier and warm, high of 79 and low of 62, wind south 12 to 25 miles per hour. Friday, a shower and thunderstorm, high of 72, low of 50, wind southwest 10 to 20 miles per hour. Regional outlook, partly sunny, then mostly cloudy this afternoon, windy and warmer. Expect between 4 and 8 hours of sunshine with average relative humidity 50% and good drying conditions. A thunderstorm tonight. Skywatch, sunrise 6:09 a.m., set 7:40 p.m., moonrise 9:05 a.m., set 12:13 a.m. First quarter moon, April 23rd, full moon, May 1st, last quarter moon, May 9th, and new moon, May 16th. Let's see here, statistics, the almanac, the high and low, 60 and 38, normal high and low, 65 and 45, the record high was 86 in 2002, the record low was 21 in 1983, so far, through on Sunday, no precipitation. Month to date, 3.13 inches. And normal month to date is 2.41 inches. Year to date, 11.60 inches. Normal year to date is 9.45 inches, which is great news because it seems like we've been in a bit of a drought through the winter. So getting that precipitation is great. And the record for this date was 2.55 inches in 1970. And with that, we have come to the end of the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, April 21st, 2026. We'll take a short break and return with the second half hour.